some velvet morning when I'm straight. I'm gonna open up your gate and maybe tell you about Phaedra and how she gave me life and how she made it in. Some velvet morning when I'm straight.
You're listening to SciTalk with your host, Dirk Vanderploeg.
Today we're very fortunate to interview Lan Lampere. Some say he's infamous, others famous. Still others call him a storm chaser. He's a former videographer, host of the Edge radio program, and now host of Overnight AM. In the 1990s, Lan videoed a storm which caught what appeared to be a UFO. Now, for the first time, and exclusive to PSITalk.com and UFODigest.com, Lan tells his story.
I haven't really wanted to tell anybody about it for a long time. We never really took the taping of the object that we filmed in May of 1997 to be very serious. It was just an anomaly on the tape, and we never really could understand it. We never could make any heads or tails out of it. And I will tell you, this is the first interview I've ever done where I've actually told the whole story in regard to that tape. And I think the reason why is because we didn't really know what the tape was. We never knew that the object that was there was real. I even though there was something there, I never said it was an alien, or I didn't promote it as being such, and I never will. To me, it is an unknown. So an unknown doesn't take precedence. And therefore, we have never really talked about it. I've done several interviews. I did one with Art Bell. It's actually two with Art Bell. One with Gary England. And I was on Sightings in 1999 for their premiere. I think that show's gone off the air since, which is unfortunate because I enjoyed that show.
Yeah, it was a great show.
Yeah. But we never really pushed this object tape, this phenomena that we viewed on the tape as being something that was very serious. And unfortunately, that wasn't the case. It should have been taken serious. We sent the tape over to NASA. A gentleman named Ulfa Skeet Vaughn, who is the video analyst at Redstone Arsenal in Huntsville, Alabama, and a very nice guy. He's also responsible for discovering sprites on tops of thunderstorms that apparently this energy shoots out of the top of the thunderstorm and can only be viewed from space. But he was trying his best to figure out what that was at the same time, so he was working with the people over the National Severe Storms Laboratory here in Norman, Oklahoma. And Dr. Davies Jones is the person who put me in touch with Skeet. They were combining their research efforts and decided, Davies Jones decided to show the tape to Skeet, who contacted me. And that's the only reason it ever made it over as far as NASA. But that, at that point, it was pretty interesting because NASA actually taken an interest in something that was of unknown origin. Now, a lot of people came to me and said, "Lan, this is the fringe element of the UFO community, as I like to call it," because a lot of people came to me just because I had filmed something that I did not see with the naked eye, and told me, "You are a chosen one," or "You are someone who is a leader, and you should be expected to have alien children. I never bought into that, and I never wanted to push it. There are the fringe elements that are out there inside any development or research community, trying to understand something new, something that is unexplained, and they take it to the extreme. And I never wanted to be a part of that, and I wasn't. As a matter of fact, when Art Bell called me, and this is a true story, he'll verify it if you can contact him. When he called me, I was almost drunk off my butt. I was sitting at the house, had a long day working and doing editing on video, and he called me up at 11, 12 o'clock at night and said, "Lance, this is Art Bell." And I said, "Hey, that's good for you." And I hung up the phone. Well, the phone rang immediately, and I picked it up. And again, it was Art Bell, this time with a more definitive explanation of who he was and where he was calling from and what he did. I thought that he was some guy out in the middle of the desert that was on a little 1,000-watt station that talked about aliens and ghosts and goblins and things like that. Had never heard of him before that.
Right.
Turns out he had an audience of over 2 million people, and everybody in the world knew who I was. Otherwise, I would have never given permission for him to interview me over the phone.
Yeah, your background when it comes to talking about the weather, you're a storm chaser.
No, I'm not. Don't call me a storm chaser. A storm chaser is someone who is very adamant and about the weather and capturing the video and then selling it. People
okay.
who are storm chasers are people who, they literally, they're very rude people. They jump in their car, they have their little own community and of people and storm enthusiasts, and they go out and they film the weather and they get a charge out of it. That's not what I do. What I did in 1997 to 1999, I was a professional videographer. I captured images of storms for television, for media, you name it. Our images went everywhere. But that didn't make me a storm chaser. People labeled me a storm chaser. Art is the first person to ever use that terminology on me as a storm chaser. It wasn't true then. I explained it to his audience too, but people continue to call me a storm chaser. No, what I am is a professional photographer turned host of a radio program. That's
okay.
What I am.
So when you're going over your film, what did you find?
The film is very unique. It's a tripoded camera, a broadcast camera. It was a Panasonic something. I don't even remember what the letters on that camera was now. It's been a long time. It was one of the first of the 3C CD chip cameras to come out. It was broadcast quality, and it was set up with a wide-angle lens on a storm that was forming a funnel cloud. It was a not a very high-contrast funnel cloud, so we upped the gain on it a little bit on the camera, the lux value, and we just left it running, doing a time-lapse image of this rotating cloud, and was hoping, you know, he's going to make me more money if that cloud comes in contact with the ground, because at that point it's a tornado, and that's worth more money than just a funnel cloud. And I was sort of hoping that it would do that, because it was out in the middle of nowhere. It didn't do any damage to anything, maybe a couple of rabbits, but it didn't happen. It just started to rope back out, and that was the end of it. We got in our vans and my truck, and we took off down the road, and we went and found some other shots to take images of, and that was the end of it. Now, I had a friend named Charles Edwards at the time who owned a touring company for storm tours, which I don't agree with. I will tell you that much. I think it's dangerous, and I don't recommend anyone doing that. It sounds like an experience and an adventure to be lived over and over again in your mind as you get older, but, you know, it's just not worth your life. And most of these people do not have any type of history whatsoever inside weather outside of the fact that they can change, outside of the fact that they know how to chase storms. I don't personally feel like I need to put my life in someone like my life. This is my life, and I don't want to put it in the hands of someone who just enjoys chasing storms and decides to start up a Mickey Mouse tour company that's unregulated, uninsured. Anyway, Charles had a video crew here doing a shot with him. They were doing a feature with him riding around with his storm tour company called Cloud Nine Tours, and they were from they had an interpreter, I believe his name was Mark, or maybe Alan, or something like that, pretty much a snake in the grass, and he was their interpreter. He was also their quasi-interpreter slash producer, and he invited myself, I think it was Matt Biddle, who was from the University of Oklahoma, Charles Edwards, of course, a few other friends that we knew that were in that business, and myself to go over to the Hampton Inn in Norman, Oklahoma, and have a video preview, because they had not, they had been running around with Charles for 2 weeks. They had no images that they could use outside of the back-end footage to put this story together for Japanese TV. So what they did was invite us to come over, and we showed them all of our video. Well, I think I was like the first one to go, or maybe the second. And we popped the video in there, you know, it was just VCR stuff, and popped it in there, let them preview it. They sit and they evaluate it, and they decided whether or not they wanted it. The Japanese are very strange that way. They have a very unique way of doing things, very decisive. Well, I was talking to my buddy, I think it was Matt Biddle I was talking to my right, and we were sitting in the back of the room, and they were a little closer to the television set and looking at this video. And Mark looks over at me, their interpreter, I think his name is Mark, looked over at me and said, Lan, what is that? And I said, what's what? Oh, that's a funnel cloud that was shot down in Loco, Oklahoma. He goes, no, not that. And he rewinds it, and then he plays it fast forward. And I said, well, I don't know what that is. I see this big object go whizzing through the screen. It just goes right to left, but not just right to left. It's actually showing depth of field. Larger as you see it, and then it gets smaller and smaller and smaller as it goes into the distance, and it goes right into a hail horn. And it's a very unique piece of video. It shows depth perception. You have depth of field. You have you know where everything is inside this image. You can see the van. You can see the road. You can see this post. And you know how far you are from it. You know how far the distance is.
Can you use a drive? Yeah.
Yeah, it was an ovaline, spherical type, white, silver glowing object that passes from your right shoulder, if you're looking at the television set, into the distance of the screen. Now, I will tell you this, and a lot of people know this. I've never told anyone this. There's only one other person in the world that does know this, minus the people at sightings. They were aware of it. That as soon as this object goes whizzing by your shoulder and into the distance, and you continue to look at this video on a full screen monitor, that is a monitor that is used in video production, it shows you everything that the camera saw rather than cutting it out around the edges. A small white piece of luminescent debris falls from the left of the screen and works its way down and goes right back out of the screen. And it's the same color, and it's the same size as the object was when it whizzes by.
What do you think it was?
Well, we sent the tape to Jeff Sanyo on the advice of Dr. Bruce McAfee from MUFON. Now, Jeff is known for his research on, I think, propulsion systems or experimental propulsion systems at MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. And he came back with this and wrote a long, drawn-out letter stating, basically, I don't know what this is. It doesn't appear to be anything other than debris that is whizzing around the vans, which you can't see them, but they're right behind the camera, from a passing car, possibly a piece of cottonwood, you know, flour or something,
right,
which
right.
We have a lot of in Oklahoma. They're little white, fluffy things. They're all over the place, and especially in the spring. So this was in the spring. Now, I asked Dr. Bruce McAfee about it. I brought it to his attention. I brought it to the attention of Skeet Vaughn at NASA and several other people, some people at University of Arizona. And they determined that the object that floats down from the left-hand corner after the object goes whizzing by has absolutely nothing to do with that object. Now, I personally, to be honest with you, have a very hard time believing that. I truly believe that whatever it was a small piece of debris by the lens flying by and then coming back around, just as Jeff Samuel says, out of the screen and then getting closer to the lens and then floating by the lens. And the camera, having a wide-angle lens on it, would have distorted whatever it was. Now, that's what I believe, and that's what I, in my heart, believe to be true. Hence the reason why I never, and I never have said, this is an alien object. This is not an ET vessel that is visiting Earth and penetrating storms. Unfortunately, my theory goes flying out the window. I don't know that it's alien, but I do know it's unknown. And the reason why is because Gary England, who works at KWTV, who is a friend of mine in Oklahoma City, he was the meteorologist. He helped revolutionize the way society, all of public society, use radar inside the United States. He was the first station, he was the first proponent of a radar at a television station to help a locale, wherever that city is, and he was the first person to ever do it in Oklahoma, or period, ever, anywhere in the world, and people followed his advice. They went off as his example, and they continued to put radar radars in, you know, different stations around the world, and hence we got, you know, local radar now. Doppler radar is completely different, but local radar. It doesn't matter whether it's radar or not, you know, fiber or whatever. But it covers all over the place in these storms, because we have violent weather here. When they got back from doing this shoot, they reviewed the video, and the next thing you know, you have something very similar in their video that was in my video. Same size, same shape, same speed, momentum, same color saturation from the whites to the grays, flying in around this thunderstorm near Tulsa, and it was 2 or 3 weeks later.
So you think it's possible it could be a natural phenomenon?
It's a possibility. Plasma ball lightning has been brought to our attention, and I knew that there was a possibility of that being so. So actually, 2 or 3 weeks after we found out about the tape, I took it to the National Severe Storms Laboratory in Norman, Oklahoma. Dr. Davies Jones, as I mentioned earlier, the president and vice chairman, I think, of the National Severe Storms Lab and the Severe Storms Prediction Center, or SDC, reviewed this tape in front of a camera for Channel 5, which here in Oklahoma City, which is KOCO. The gentleman's name was Scott Travis. He was a photographer who had been sent down to WKOCO to film them watching, or the people at NSSL and SBC watching this video, and they were all sitting there shaking their heads. And this went on national, you know, live local news.
Right.
They're sitting there scratching their heads. And he wound up doing an interview with all of them. And they said that whatever that is in that tank has absolutely nothing to do with that storm. And the first question that came out of Scott's mouth was, is it ball lightning? And they said, oh, absolutely not. Ball lightning doesn't work in that manner. This object traveled 7 miles in a split second. NASA estimated, or not NASA, let's say Ulta Vaughn, not NASA, because NASA is an administrative organization. Ulta Vaughn, who's the video analyst for NASA at Redstone Arsenal, he's the person who determined that it was moving this fast and how thick and wide it was. And it was moving at Mach 16. Now, technically, Mach 16, which is 16 times the speed of sound, an object that was a quarter of an inch in diameter traveling at that fast through the atmosphere at 500 feet off the ground, which is his determination, not mine, it should have incinerated everything in front of it before it even got to it, and after it, of course. Because of the density of the air, it would have superheated the air. Of course, we heard nothing. We saw nothing. Which lends me to believe that it was a piece of debris floating around in front of the camera lens. Unfortunately, the experts, unless every one of them are wrong, which is a possibility, they insist that it was something large of unknown origin floating around in our atmosphere at a high rate of speed.
So you think there's much to do about nothing?
I personally think it was much to do about nothing, yes. It thrust me into the limelight. And of course, then I got a great lesson from it, that being that the people inside the UFO community, and I think this is probably true with every person, have a tendency to over-exaggerate things. There's no responsibility, especially inside the UFO community, that there's no responsibility for their actions. They can make any kind of claim that they want to, whether it be, I had an anal probe at 3 o'clock in the morning, or, hell, I had a ground glass enema at 5 o'clock in the morning, and ET gave it to me. And there's nothing to substantiate what they're saying, because there's no hard evidence to prove it.
People are desperate.
I think that when you go looking for something, whether you're a UFO investigator, a reporter, a ghost hunter, especially in the ghost hunting field as well, to be honest with you, I think that it doesn't matter who you are or what you do, if you go looking for something, that you're always going to find it. I don't think that there's any...
you have a preconceived idea of what the evidence is going to show, and the result is whatever you manufacture in your own mind.
This is true. I agree with what you're saying. You're absolutely right. People do have a preconceived idea of what they're going to find, and if they get something unusual or just a little bit out of the ordinary, or possibly as a ghost hunter, I just recently had an encounter with a ghost hunter who claimed that he had filmed this face floating in the road. And I'm a photographer, of course. I have over 10 years of experience with still cameras and video cameras. I know about photography. I've seen pretty much everything that can go wrong with a camera or taking an image. I've seen it go wrong. I know what it is when I look at it, double exposure, underexposure, something near the lens. And the most common thing that you see with ghost hunting is when somebody takes a flash or they forget to turn the flash off. First off, why would you need a flash? If a ghost, you use a flash to illuminate something that is solid in front of you. The light bounces, it leaves the camera, it comes back to the camera from the subject, reflecting that light, and it records that image. Why the hell would you use a flash to capture a ghost?
Well, you wouldn't.
You wouldn't need a flash. Right, you go right through it. You're not going to illuminate something that is invisible, or whether it's an apparition, or if it's maybe some of that plasma that they, I guess, I don't know what they call bioplasma.
Ectoplasma.
There you go. It's ectoplasma, right. It reminds me of Ghostbusters. You slimed me. Anyway. But I don't think that ectoplasm is probably capable of reflecting light back to the camera. Hence, you have some very weird things. Now, of course, there are some photographs that are out there quite unexplainable. Either that or they were created.
Right.
Because it's been known through history, especially with old-time photography from the 1800s, early 1900s, up until even the late 50s, people were manipulating film to create effects. We do that now with Adobe Photoshop and digital technology. Back then, they used to do what's called overlays, whether it be a glass or a negative overlay or transparency or transcreation. And that's technically what it is. You're taking two things, creating one thing. So it's a transcreation from two objects into one. And they used to sell these things as being very unique. This is a ghost. The photographers would be approached back in the 1800s just to get publicity to their town. They would literally create little ghost stories. This is well known, well documented. I think the most famous of these photographs are probably the fairies photographs that were created back in the 1900s by an Englishman.
Yeah.
Well, everybody's aware that, these are fake photographs. You can look at them and see they're very fake, but God, what a great job he did. Phenomenal job. And I think that continues to happen today because people have their own agenda. And that agenda is, I want to be a ghost hunter, or I want to be a UFOlogist or a UFO investigator. And, of course, they go out of their way to create these items to gain publicity, to gain momentum inside the community, so that they can be number one. I think that's human nature. Everybody wants to be the best at what they can be, and some people just skimp out on doing real research.
Well, we're winding up this interview, Lynn, but tell me about your Overnight AM radio show.
Overnight AM, it's a derivative of The Edge. When I did the radio program called The Edge, it was on the Hollow Effects radio network, and I am no longer on that. We created Overnight AM. It is a production of Lampier Productions, and we're looking at June 20th. It might be a little bit later because we are in talks with syndicators, the Jones Radio Network, the Talk Radio Network, and of course I can't really go into any detail in regard to that, but I will tell you that we are at our flagship station is at 1520 AM in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. If you live west, north, or south of Oklahoma City, you will be able to hear this on 1520 AM starting from 1 until 5 in the morning.
Okay.
So there you have it. And it's going to be a great show. It is very much like coast-to-coast AM, except that we kick it up about 12 notches higher. Instead of having someone come on who said, hey, I had an anal probe at 3 o'clock in the morning, instead of putting that person on, because of the nature of the community, I would much rather put someone on who is a theoretical physicist. And let's talk about the existence or the possibility of extraterrestrial life inside our solar system or our universe or our galaxy. That, to me, has more legitimacy in a radio program than just talking about someone who, you know, who had an experience and nothing to back it up. Because it doesn't do anything but add to the problem of trying to figure out what our world is really about. Let's talk about something real.
Sounds
and that's
good.
What Overnight AM is about.
Sounds good, and I wish you every success in the world with the new show.
Thank you.
And I'll be talking to you later.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna open up your gate and maybe tell you about Phaedra and how she gave me life and how she made.